This is the Mind and Fitness Podcast. It is Wednesday, March the 6th. Thank you so much for tuning in today. I am recording this a week prior, so if anything big has happened in the news, anything TMS related or anything like that, in the last 8 days, I'm recording this way in advance. So the main reason is that I currently am in Maui, and by the time that you're listening to this, hopefully I'm sitting on the beach or I'm on a water slide or riding a motorcycle or something cool like that. But I'm in Hawaii right now. So, but I wanted to bring you a killer interview. So there's a couple of CrossFit gyms up in the Seattle area called Remedy Athletics, and I thought it'd be really cool. So there is a one of the owners, Ryan Swobody, who this interview is with. He's a three-time CrossFit Games competitor. His CrossFit Games team, or his CrossFit team, even finished at third in the entire world back in 2014. He owns some gyms, and he posted this thing on social media that was talking about basically when I saw it, I thought about Dr. Sarno's Reservoir of Rage. So it had to do, it was like the idea of a big beaker that's filling with different things, stresses, life, all this kind of stuff. And then you need to be able to have a way to empty it out. And so, or you something starts to happen. And so it's a lot about mental health. And I reached out to him about it, said, hey, I want to interview about this concept. So this interview is not really very TMS at all. I might bring up the name once or twice or something like that. But a lot of it has to do with just mental health and human connection, connecting with the community, being involved in CrossFit, that kind of stuff. And one of the really cool things that he discusses in this is something that the IAFF, the International Association of Firefighters, is doing to help address mental health problems and this concept of the Reservoir of Rage with firefighters around the world. And so I think that you're really going to like what it is that you hear. So he owns a couple of gyms. One is in a town called Everett, which is about 20 or 25 miles north of Seattle. And then another one in a town called Marysville, which is probably 50 miles north of Seattle. So if you're in either one of those areas, if you're in either one of those areas and you do CrossFit, you've probably heard his name before, or know who he is or are aware of him. So definitely take the opportunity to check him out. This is a cool interview, and like I said, it's definitely a little unorthodox compared to some of the ones that that you used to hearing on this podcast. But it is it's new as well, and it's new idea, it's thought provoking, that kind of stuff, which is really awesome. So thank you so much for listening to the interview. I will be back sometime in the next couple of weeks. You'll hear from me as you hear this. I'm going to be in Chicago next week, and then I'll be back home hopefully for a while, for a couple of months. After that. I almost forgot. How did I do that? But let me just quickly throw out thank yous to the patrons of this podcast. Go to patreon.com/themindandfitnesspodcast. Thank you, Stan. Thanks to Kristen. Thanks to Sarah. Thanks to Helen, Arnie, Barb, and Kim, all supporters of the show monetarily. A couple things I'm looking at are some new equipment pieces right now. For instance, I've got like a holding microphone, one you actually hold with your hand. I'm looking at replacing it with like a headset microphone with a boom attached to it. They're not cheap, but I've had patrons now for a couple of months, and so taking that money and reinvesting it into the podcast would be pretty awesome. So here is Ryan Swobody. Thanks, everybody, so much. This is the Mind and Fitness Podcast. I am your host, Eddie Lindenstein. I am sitting about 3 feet away from Ryan Swobody. He's a firefighter a little north of Seattle, owns a couple of CrossFit gyms. I've actually known him for, what's the year now? 2019. I probably met him in 2008, working for Muscular Dystrophy Association. Ryan, thanks so much for being here.
Yeah, thank you. It's an honor.
You know, the initial reason that I wanted us to get together was there a post that you did on social media that really caught my eye a couple of weeks ago. I think, like, especially in athletics, it's very easy it's tough in a way for us as athletes to think of, if I have a pain or I have a problem or I have an issue, that it's rooted in I squatted too much the other day, or I deadlifted too much 2 years ago, or, you know, whatever the case is. You posted something that was radically similar to Dr. John Sarno, who this podcast is about, his idea of a reservoir essentially overflowing and causing physical problems. A buddy of mine, Pete Hong, sent that over to me. I guess, give me the spiel, like what, and I'll post a picture to this that people know what I'm talking about, but like, where did that come from? What's the genesis origination, like that methodology has come to you?
Yeah, so that post in itself was a it was basically an idea that I've had in my head for quite a while, and it has to do with the fire service community that I'm a part of. So I started a new Instagram page titled The Servant Athlete, and basically what it's focused on is issues that public servants face as far as health and wellness. And one of the major issues we see now is mental health and how that adds up over the course of a career. So I posted that mostly for the public servant community, but it had direct relation and ties to the athletics and the gym culture that I'm a part of as well. So I shared it from my personal page as well, just so that people could have eyes on it, and it had a really great response. Mm-hmm. Like, people recognize the theory behind it, and they recognize that, oh, this is important. And I feel like the diagram of that bucket and how, you know, you could relate that to our mental health and how, you know, it may not feel like overwhelm or anything like that for a period of time. But then at some point that bucket gets full, and you need to have a spigot installed on the bucket. You need to have a relief of some sort.
Yep.
And so it's important to make sure that those things are in place before that bucket gets too full.
So what are some things that if you had a fellow firefighter or really anybody come to you and say, I buy into what it is that you're saying, I feel like my bucket is getting to the top, what can I do?
Sure. And as of late, a whole lot of work's been done in what we call the peer support community. And that's basically firefighters and law enforcement officers working together with mental health professionals and creating a system where there's access to mental health professionals easily for people in those careers. But it starts with just talking to a friend, like you said, somebody coming to you and saying, hey, you know, I kind of feel like I'm feeling like I'm getting to overwhelm. Mm-hmm. My bucket's getting full. And, you know, I would approach it first with just the things I know that work for me personally and the clients that I see in the gym, physical activity, making sure that your lifestyle reflects, you know, a lifestyle of wellness, eating correctly, getting enough sleep, making sure you have some outlets for stress management, things like that. And probably just digging in with that person and seeing what makes them feel good and feel fulfilled. And, start implementing some of those things into their life. And if that isn't helping, then immediately go to some sort of mental health professional and get them the access to that.
You know, the therapist that I used to see, and he's since retired, but he would talk about this same concept, but he would call it, it's either like the box of rocks or the bucket of rocks or something like that. But he would say, and this is true, like, and there's been a lot of research done in this area, the big study, which was, I think, early 90s, late maybe the late 90s, but it was called the Adverse Childhood Experiences Study, which there's 10 or 12 questions on it, and it asks you to rate, okay, did you grow up in a household where you felt unsafe? Did you grow up in a household where you were hit? Did you observe your mother and your father physically getting an altercation? So there's a lot of these things that basically if it's a yes or no, and the higher up on the yes part that you are, the bigger that your predisposition is going to be to have a full bucket to start. So you may walk, you know, you may wake up every day with a bucket that's 75% full. And so the challenge is being able to balance that 25% that you have of room. But part of the problem is, like, if you're like, I think of medics or EMTs, if you go and you see a horrific accident that involves a child or something like that, something that really hits you, like you have a job to do. And I think that sometimes in a career like that, it would probably be incredibly tough to be able to process those kind of things because you are going from call to call. You may see a little kid in an accident, and then 2 hours later you're going to fight a fire at an elderly home or something like that, right?
Yeah.
So I feel like in careers like that, you're bouncing so much from place to place, you don't have the processing time, and you're repressing so much of it, and the emotional repression is really where the bucket's getting really full.
Sure.
And so I guess, like, is there like a regular practice that you personally have to, you know, is it a nightly meditation? Is it a journal? Like, a lot of people have a lot of different things. Like, what do you do?
Well, and you're absolutely right. And I think that we all think of it in terms that you just described as far as those calls and those scenes that we're on regularly. What I've found in 15 years thus far in the fire service is that, and this is in the post that I made, I was referring to a battalion chief that I had earlier in my career. And he was saying that it's not just those big calls. It's every call you go on is going to add a little drop, a little bit to that bucket, and you don't even realize it until it's too late. It could be I've seen it in my coworkers. It could be the most simple call that just puts them over the edge. So we need to be aware of that as well. It's not just those big calls, those horrific things we see every day, but just the constant exposure to a situation that we're unfamiliar with regularly. But knowing that and being cognizant of that through my career, I've always tried to keep a focus on implementing those things into my life and finding ways. So I kind of structure my days with a specific routine. And I feel like routine has allowed me to feel that freedom and feel like I have the opportunity for relief at any point. So, you know, having some consistency in my life, going to bed at a similar time, waking up at a similar time, even if I am all up all night at the fire department, starting my day and finishing my day the same way every day, and then building in times in my day to be by myself or to clear my head or to do something that's going to make me feel fulfilled. And not, you know, I regularly get caught up in the busyness of life, you know, being a business owner and a father and a firefighter. And sometimes that all that stuff can just keep you going all day long. But if I don't have those systems built in where I take some time, you know, after lunch and I sit by myself to read or whatever it happens to be, then that starts to spiral out of control. But it's taken some real focus to build those things into my life, and it's taken years. And I'm just that type of person. I have to have those boundaries. And if you don't have those boundaries, life can catch up with you and overwhelm you quickly.
So you began firefighting at 19 then? 20?
Yeah, right after high school. I went to school for it.
So how has your talk about like the evolution of the concepts that you're talking about from when you were 20 or 22 versus 30, 33, 34.
Sure. And I think you could go back even further than that. My mom was a 911 dispatcher my whole life. My dad retired from the fire department just this last year.
Oh, cool.
He had over 30 years in. So I've been in a service household my whole life, and I've kind of seen the pros and cons of doing certain things. You know, I've learned enormous amounts from my mom and my dad, both good and bad. Like, you know, the quality practices and the things that lead to, you know, a poor lifestyle and the things that lead us down a poor path. So I've been able to learn those lessons throughout my entire life. And then going into the fire service, I felt somewhat equipped, maybe more so than the people that I was going to school with and being hired in the fire department with. But since being hired, I did go through that initial phase of, nothing can hurt me, mm-hmm. you know, I go on difficult calls or any call, and nothing really bothered me. I felt kind of invincible and that I was made for this. Yep. Like, I'm one of those people that this stuff doesn't bother. And I'd say I went a good 8 to 10 years that way until I finally started recognizing signs and symptoms of not only overwhelm, but feeling insufficient, feeling like maybe, you know, that next call that I go on could be that call that yep. kind of leads me down a poor path. So that's where I really decided I've got to catch it now. I've got to start doing some things and implementing some things into my life. And my wife and her family really saved me from that. I am a man of faith. I am a Christ follower, and that's been a huge part of my life. And I don't expect that everyone follows me or that that's exactly the right thing to do for everyone. But if you are looking for something, I think that people should pursue different things in their faith and stuff like that could help. So that helped me a lot. Finding CrossFit was a huge thing for me, just an outlet. When my best friend Noah Pester asked me to start working out in his garage, and we started doing that. That was a huge
old school.
That was a huge life change for me. You know, it was just that 2-car garage with the pull up bar. You know, kids' toys all over the place that you're trying to yep. dodge while you're doing Murph or whatever. But yeah, I think the combination of rededicating myself to my faith and then finding CrossFit. And meeting my wife and her family were some of the big cornerstones mm-hmm. that allowed me to make some strides. But then within those things, finding little things, those boundaries throughout the day, time for myself, time to decompress, those have also helped a lot.
It's interesting that you mentioned the battalion chief that had said it's not necessarily the big ones, but it's like the little, could be like the little drops, right, over right. time. And there's a interesting story in one of Sarno's books where he talks about a lot of people do think that it's the big type T traumas that that could lead to issues like this. But he said, you know, you may start developing terrible back spasms or terrible pain or terrible migraines or whatever 4 hours after your neighbor didn't say hi to you when you went to the mailbox, right? That there's just sort of this expectation of connection maybe that people don't get, and maybe that could cause a problem. Like it's just, there's a lot of evaluation there. And the other thing about CrossFit too, and this will be the rough transition into a lot of the stuff that you're doing now, because you're a gym owner, you've got two locations, mm-hmm. you've been to the CrossFit games multiple times, and we're going to get into that too. Something that I started really thinking about maybe a month ago as we record this, so towards the end of December, I had a conversation with a buddy of mine, and I was saying, like, you know, one of the principal things I think particularly men have an issue with is being able to say, like, you know, we think a certain way, meaning, like, we're going to be the guy that doesn't get affected by certain things. And I think another thing that a lot of guys like to say and believe is, I'm a lone wolf and I can do things on my own. And, you know, I can take care of myself and I don't need other people, you know, all those like classic kind of machismo things.
Yeah.
And I've been working out in the garage by myself for the last year, basically, which gets really lonely. Right.
Yeah, yeah.
And I went back and I joined CrossFit Industrious at the very end of December, if for nothing else, to have a connection, like a human connection, yep. where, you know, I work from home, I don't work in an office. Right. So I don't see colleagues like hardly ever, but just the ability to see 30, 40, 50 people in a day that yeah. are not the people that sleep in my house is big. And so you're in the fitness community now. Talk about like the, you know, the necessity for connection with other members and kind of what got you into wanting to open a gym and when did you do it and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Well, that community and connection aspect is a huge part of the puzzle for why I do what I do.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there's plenty of research and people just at a gut level know that the human connection is fleeting these days.
Yep.
You know, our connection to our phones and the way that we work in cubicles and from home, you know, the ability to do work or to perform things on our own, all day long, every day has really, you know, went into the lack of connection with our neighbors. You know, like you could pull anyone aside and they probably don't know several of their neighbors, yep. their names, what they do for a living, anything. So I saw CrossFit as a great way to mend that and to create those connections. And it really is, you know, it gets so cliche, the community, the family, you know, come to my box and meet all of my friends, you know, but it's true. Even if this is just one aspect of people's social connection, it's something that brings them closer to other people. And that's really, really important for our mental and our physical health, is to feel that connection and be connected to other people. So that's why I love this style of fitness, you know, coming in and working out isn't always the easiest thing to do. Even for me, I've been doing it, you know.
Well, you're getting old.
Well, yeah. Mid-30s, man. I'm feeling it. But, you know, after 11 years of doing it, I still have a very hard time, you know, going out and doing it on my own. Every once in a while, I do enjoy getting out and going for a run or doing a workout yeah. on my own. But for the most part, I need that connection and I need other people around me and I need to, you know, feel the connection of partaking in suffering yep. with other people. You know what I mean? I think that's really, really important for our human condition. And
I mean, even just like that, when I finish up I finished up yesterday in this workout where I felt like I spent more time looking at a clock than I did doing
yeah.
the work. Right. Uh-huh. But a couple of people at the end of class, they come up and they just like, they'll fist bump you as you're laying on the floor in a pile of your own sweat. And it's just like that little thing, I feel like just goes so far. You know what I mean? Just like, even like, again, working from home, like I have to be cognizant of the fact that I've got to get out and see, like, I've got to go out and like get drinks with my buddies once a week, or I've got to get out and do an in-person interview. So many of these I do over Skype. So when there, mm-hmm. when there becomes an opportunity to do one in person, it's like, hell yeah. Like I need to jump at that. Cause it's a better experience. So one other thing too, that I'm thinking of involving connection and CrossFit is like, so you made the games as an individual, I think for the first time in 2013,
yes.
right?
Yep.
That was like the first year where I was a CrossFitter at the Open and a CrossFitter like all the way okay. through. I started like late or mid 2012. So the Open sure. had already happened and all that. And then I noticed this trend that was happening in the sport where it was like Rich Froning, the best on earth, right? Finishes number one and then goes to the team concept.
Right.
And a lot of these people moving to the team concept. And to me, I almost felt like there's gotta be something to this. It's not just, it, you know, it's not people getting older and feeling like they're slowing down and joining the team because the best on the planet just did it.
Yeah.
And so when I see the camaraderie of the people that are in the group, I mean, is that a, like the biggest part for you where it's like, I could do this as an individual, or I could have, I don't know what the number is, five other people, six other people in this pod and we're the family.
Right. Yeah. And it made sense for me to go to that.
Oh, hold on. The mic seems to have, hold on. Let me take a, wow, technical issues live on the podcast. Hold on. This will be the first time I've ever made an edit. Let's see here. There we go. Sorry about that.
No, it's
All right, excuse that. But you were talking about the team or pod concept versus versus individual.
Yeah, I've always been a team sport athlete. I've growing up, the sports that I played and enjoyed the most always were, you know, team style. I was never really an individual athlete. And so when CrossFit came about, and I enjoyed the experience of being an individual, but when that opportunity arose for a team style competitive atmosphere, I was all over it. It just felt right. It felt natural. And then after we got started and training with other people consistently, just like we were talking about coming into a group class, you know, it's easier, it's more fun as a part of a team. Same thing with competition. When you're working out with these people and you're accountable to other people and other people are there to support you, it just feels better to me. That might not be true for everybody, but the team concept felt a lot better. And it was easier for our community to connect with as well.
Yep.
All of these different personalities, all of these different people working together, I felt like it was really good for our community to see and for people to recognize that, oh, I don't have to do everything on my own.
Yep.
I think that our team did a great job of that. We had such different style athletes. You know, you look at Kelsey Nagel, who's, you
know, I went to high school with her. God, I know. I mean, I think she played volleyball or something when I was in high school. And I remember always she shared a last name with my gym teacher. And I remember thinking, like, that's why she's so, they ended up not being related, but, or I don't think they were related, but yeah, like yeah. A monster. Like it's
an incredible
crazy.
Person, incredible athlete. Yeah. She played collegiate soccer at University of Pacific, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have Ashley Moe, you know, who's a very small athlete, very good at the gymnastic style stuff. And then myself and Noah, and everybody had kind of different personalities, different capabilities as far as working out. And I think that for people to see that a group of kind of different individuals come together and work together so well and perform at a high level was really good to recognize and to kind of tie in with the real world. Like at work, yeah, I may be different than these people. I may have some differences, but we can work together and we can accomplish a goal.
Yep.
So I just saw that relevance, not only in CrossFit, but people can see that in our team and other teams and use it in their real lives. So it just felt right to me. And being in the fire service, it was nice to come back to work and for people to recognize that, there's someone here. Well, Noah and I both, a couple guys here that work on this department who work as a part of a team and to maybe take some of the lessons that they see us on TV at the CrossFit Games or whatever and implement those into how we work at the fire department as well. Because teamwork's so important there.
Well, it's an interesting underscore just for life, really, because I think so many of us, especially you alluded to it earlier, kind of in this time of social media and phones and isolation and kind of all that a lot of us feel like we're in life on our own, right?
Yeah.
Like we're not the same, you know, we're not the same people, but like the brass tacks of it is that a lot of us are regardless of like, you know, political views, religious sure. views, like whatever it is, even if like I go and do bodybuilding workouts at Harbor Square and somebody else works out at CrossFit Industrious, like yeah. we're still people and we still like fitness and we can find a commonality. And I feel totally. Like that's a big part of what you're talking about.
I agree. And you were talking earlier about, you know, being a guy in this time and in this age. I think it's a great time, you know, to be living right now because mm-hmm. we have kind of type A masculine type gentlemen coming out and talking about vulnerability. You look at, I like to listen to Lewis Howes and The Mask of Masculinity in the book that he wrote. And you have these people who are, you know, macho type dudes who are coming out and expressing the fact that we can be open and vulnerable with each other. And I think that CrossFit is a great way for people to get together and to recognize that we're all just kind of failed people who are struggling through this. But if we do it together, then it's a whole lot better. Our you know, motto here at Remedy Athletics is that an army of people pursuing fitness together can change the world. And I totally believe that. I totally believe that people who have a focus on wellness and fitness that are doing this thing together will change the world. So that's why I believe in the CrossFit movement. You know, doing these things together, doing hard things together is going to provide that spigot, that relief on that bucket, for us to accept more stress into our lives, because that's what life is, right? How much stress can you continue to put on yourself?
It's the balance.
Yeah, exactly. And if we have those relief valves, whether it's CrossFit or if you enjoy marathon running or you just like going to the movies with your kids, whatever it is that provides that relief for you, you need to utilize and recognize. And when you feel that bucket filling up, you need to be able to rely on those things. I just happen to think that fitness and leading a healthy lifestyle is the best way to do that.
Well, I think that, which by the way, Ryan and I are not at a rock concert and we're not in a construction zone. We're in the gym right now and there is a class going on. So if you hear some background stuff, that's what it is. But I think that any time that you can, because I'm in total agreement. In fact, when I work with clients talking chronic pain clients, the thing that I tell them, the absolute necessity is, like, regardless of kind of the pain that you're feeling, whether it's in your back or your head or your foot or whatever it is, like, getting to the absolute maximum possible physical activity you can get to, and doing it as soon as possible, to me, is the single biggest thing to get people out of pain. Like, that's my personal belief. But I think that if you can intersect physicality with human connection, sure, that's the ultimate, which is what we've been talking about. And it doesn't need to be going to a CrossFit gym or going to a powerlifting gym or whatever, because it could be as simple as, like, you meet a friend and you walk the mall together. Like, totally. It could be,
absolutely.
Could be really anything, because you do need, like, human connection. You do need physicality, and there's a variety of things that you can do. I mean, just having somebody to talk to. Yep. My buddy Brad and I, we were saying, like, okay, you like to power lift and you deadlift and you bench and you squat. And I'm like, and I like to do CrossFit. I'm like, so we're two guys. I've got a bunch of tattoos. We're these masculine guys, right? But we're two dudes that are now just sitting talking about our feelings. Like, that's totally what we do, you know, which is like, it's even 5 years ago, I feel like that's very taboo.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, doing something physical in general is going to, you know, all the science is there. It gets the endorphins flowing, allows your mind to go to a different level. And so if you're exercising together, even if you're doing low level activity, it allows your brain to perform at an extra level. And you can start addressing those things, you know, talking about your feelings or emotions or what's happening in your life. You may not even go into the workout or the conversation expecting that, but because of the nature of physical activity and getting your body moving and doing it with somebody else is just naturally usually going to gravitate towards that. And I think that's why, you know, things like CrossFit and other team-based sports lead to so much connection. You know, these athletes that retire from team sports have such a hard time doing so. And mm-hmm. I think that's a huge reason why they feel this connection to the team and a bigger purpose. And that's true in life. You don't have to be a professional athlete to feel that connection. You can find a physical activity somewhere that's going to lead to not just a better body and a healthier body, but a healthier mind as well.
Yep.
And more personal connection and relationships.
I think it's the same with people that are used to working in any sort of a field where there is camaraderie, whether it's they work at Home Depot with a lot of people, uh-huh. or they're a firefighter, whatever it is, and they retire. And then the human connection part is gone, because now you're sitting at home by yourself.
Yeah.
And I know that, like, retirement is a massive predisposition to chronic pain or other health ailments. And I think some people think that it's because they're getting older, but a lot of it has to do with you now are missing out on that connection, which is going to find, like, Catherine Stokovich, who goes to Industrious, and she,
amazing woman.
It's like, I think she started CrossFit like 6 months before retirement.
Okay.
And so that, I mean, maybe she anticipated there would be a big void from working for Primera for 40 years or whatever it was. And now, and then gets to start CrossFit and then makes the games like four or five straight yeah. times or whatever it is. Like, it's funny. I tell people at the 3:30 class, if I go in there, I'm like, okay, usually what I'll do is I'll come in and I'll compare to see what the baseline is and how I need to do for the day on my workout. I look at Molly, who's 7 months pregnant,
right.
or I look at Catherine, who's 66 years old, because as long as I can get anywhere near them. But I think that that's, that's really big. I'd love to talk to Catherine sometime about, now that it's coming to me, you know, that element of like working in an office, working with people, seeing people every day, having a connection. If she didn't find CrossFit, how different could her life be? And I bet she would say it would be massively different.
I'm willing to bet the same. Yeah. And that would be a great interview for you, because, you know, people at that point in their life are going to need that. Mm-hmm. My dad retired this last year and he moved down to Arizona, and I'm so thankful that, you know, he's found a group that he golfs with and he plays softball with on a team now. And if he didn't have that, you know, I do worry what would happen. That so at every stage of our life, finding those relief valves and those opportunities for relief of our stress or whatever it happens to be, in that human connection, is super important.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Not something I think about regularly, retirement yet at this point, but for people at that point in their life, like that's super, super important.
Yeah. So switching gears even a little bit further. So something that's interesting, my buddy Pete Hong, shout out to Pete. He was the one that told me that you posted this thing, and he's like, look at this thing that he put, because him and I talk about this stuff all the time.
Okay. Yeah.
And I remember he was telling me, it was something like, I don't know, maybe 7 or 8 months ago, I had recommended he read a book. He was having like a lot of glute pain, hip pain, low back pain, you know, kind of the standard. And I think that for a long time he just thought this is the life of a weightlifter, because he trains. I mean, his volume is great. He might do 2 or 2.5 hours a day, 5 days a week. And I don't have that in me. And I had said, check out this book and just, you know, I know about his personal life and maybe if there's challenges, whatever, but I was like, check out this book and kind of tell me what it is that you think. And he read it, and a few days later I get a text from him, and he was like how it said it completely like changed the game on how he felt about injuries and pain and chronic issues in particular. And I think he said he gave it to his mom or something. His mom read it, and she basically, like, it was almost like this moment where it's like the clouds move, and she said, this explains so many different like that's ailments so cool. that I've had, right? So, so cool. But one interesting thing that he said is that it completely has changed the way that he coaches now.
Oh.
And so that makes me think about that your mind is on this concept too, and that you coach a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And so talk about how, as this evolved, you know, you said 8 to 10 years of your life in the fire service that you felt a certain way. So that would mean the last 5 years that has evolved. Right. Probably means these concepts have really come to you in the last 5 or so years, more so than they had before.
Yep.
Has it made you a different coach? You know, you see somebody that comes in and they're having certain issues with certain things, maybe range of motion problems, or, you know, it seems like maybe they're a little overwhelmed. Like, you know, when you're paying attention, I guess, how has this changed?
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't think I was ever at a point where I would ask people to just push through it or neglect pain or anything like that. But I certainly do have a different perspective now, and recognizing the stress of life for everybody and how that might add up and how it might, you know, create symptoms within the body that may not have anything to do with an injury or something like that, but simply the body expressing pain because of the, you know, the volume of stressors in their life. So yeah, I do approach coaching a little bit differently. I think I approach relationships in general differently over the last 5 years, especially at the fire department and within the gym. I don't look at any problem as minor. It could be a portion of a much bigger problem. And any coaching book that you read, I think at some point will address the fact that you need to just have conversations and build a relationship with your clients and understand everything. You know, a coaching relationship, a coach client or coach athlete relationship could and sometimes should get very deep.
Yep.
Like, you should know about your clients. You should know what they do for work. You should know how many kids they have. You should know what kind of stresses they face in their regular life, because the way that they move could potentially be, you know, a side effect of the way that they live otherwise.
Yep.
And, you know, I could right at the top of my head, I could think of many, many examples of that. You know, oh, their squat stinks. Like, why is this?
Yeah.
You know, and then come to find out they sit in an office chair all day long and they feel the stress of they can't get up because they have deadlines and they have to be there. And yeah, they want to get up and walk the stairs, or they want to get up and mobilize, but they just can't.
Yep.
You know, they're lifestyle and feeding their kids relies on them meeting these deadlines, and they feel that pressure, and so they don't get up out of their chair all day. It's easy for us as coaches to say, you know, set an alarm every 10, 15 minutes, get up and do a couple air squats. Yep. Well, that's easy for us to say, but when they're feeling the pressures of life, you know, it's just important for us to recognize mm-hmm. what's happening in people's lives and get on that deeper level with them. So yeah, over the last few years, I've definitely changed, I think, the way that, maybe not just the way I coach, but the way I see people in general.
Yeah.
And so just the combination of working at the fire department and seeing people stressed out and exhibiting symptoms, you know, even talking to you right now, now I'm recognizing things at work where people I work with have chronic pain or issues. And I think that we relate it to the job. You know, I've been a firefighter for 10, 15, 20 years, and this shoulder pain, knee pain, low back pain, you know, restless leg syndrome, everything else is because of the job. And that is true, but is it just the physical aspect of the job, or is it everything added up?
Yeah, I mean, what you're listing, and even before we started rolling, is like, any of the books on the cover is going to have a lot of the things that you're talking about: restless leg, TMJ, anxiety, depression. Like, there's a lot of things that fall into that yep. category. And two things that I think about a lot, where it's like the traditional thought has been external factors, but that there's been not even recent. I think the New England Journal of Medicine, it was either 92, 97, or 99, but it's Googleable for anybody that's listening to this. But there was a study done that went and did MRIs of MRIs of the C spine, T spine, and lumbar spine of people that had no back pain. So this was they essentially we're trying to control it in the greatest way. Who's never had back pain? That's who we want to MRI. And that it's somewhere between 70 and 75% of the population walking around right now has a disc herniation or an extrusion that has no back pain.
Wow.
And I remember going from doctor to doctor, and my T-spine was really where a lot of my pain was. And the doctor had said, this should have been like one of my first clues, but I didn't, mm-hmm. Either he didn't explain it as well as he could have, or I just wasn't hearing. But he said, look, there's no reason to even image this, because almost everybody has it, a disc herniation. And so the thought, and I think it's so problematic, like somebody goes to a doctor and they put all of their faith in the person in the white coat, and you know, they get an image of something and it reveals this problem. And then that image is like stuck in your head. You know what I mean? Like, and what you've been told has been stuck in your head. And I'm not like a government conspiracy guy, and that's not my, sure. my thing. And I feel like sometimes when I get really preachy about this stuff, it sounds that way. But the other thing that I think about is like traditionally the concept of a whiplash injury and that causing pain 10 years late. You know, I got rear-ended 20 years ago and my neck is still bothering me.
Right.
That one study that was done looking at different countries around the world, that in Lithuania, the concept of whiplash, like that idea, and like it's not a part of the vocabulary, and that there has not been one reported whiplash injury in the history of despite how many car accidents there have been, nobody has ever reported a whiplash injury or the long-term chronic effects of a whiplash injury. It's just not a part of who they are. When I think about the United States and North America and probably other parts of the world and how litigious we are and kind of what we, you know, if you're watching TV anytime after 9 p.m., like the attorney comes on and they say, did you have an injury? You know, did you get rear-ended by a car? Call me at 1-800 and this is whiplash and this is terrible. And but like, it's just the way that it is, unfortunately.
Makes me want to dial the phone right away.
I've been in an accident. Right, exactly. Yeah. Like, what can I come up with? And that, you know, I told you like thoracic outlet syndrome was something I was to like scalenes removal and pec minor removal and all this stuff. Cause I had that stuff on imaging and I saw those kinds of images, but you know, the buildup of cortisol, the buildup of adrenaline, like all those things in the body they can change the tonality of any, I think we have 161 muscles or something in the body, that any one of those can be affected. Nerves can be impacted, all that kind of stuff. So obviously I find it super fascinating. So I guess maybe the last couple of things that I want to tap in on with you is like, as time continues to go on and you investigate a little bit deeper into this, you started a social media account that is essentially what's it called?
It's called The Servant Athlete.
The Servant Athlete. So talk about what the plan is with this and the stories to tell and the information that you're trying to project out there into the world.
Yeah. So it's always been something that's on my mind. I'm a public servant and as a fireman, and grew up in a public servant household. I'm surrounded by people who live to serve the community, the general public, in those capacities. And a lot of attention is being put now on, you know, the health effects of those occupations, both physically, mentally, emotionally, and psychologically. And a lot of good things are being done, creating the access to mental health professions and stuff like that. But I don't see a whole lot of everyday practical advice being put out for people on how to mitigate the damage done by these careers.
It's just, it exists.
Yeah, like it's there. And if it gets too much, here's who you need to call. But in my experience, and like we were talking over the last 5 years and how I've recognized these things and what I've done to deal with them, I see that a lot of us can minimize the damage done just by our personal everyday decisions, you know, setting those boundaries for sleep and making sure we're getting the rest that we need, eating, you know, a nutritious diet. You know, it doesn't need to be anything crazy, but if we're keeping a focus on eating healthful foods, our body is going to reciprocate by, you know, providing the energy and the well-being needed to continue to do the career, continue to exercise, and things like that. So I wanted to use this page as, you know, maybe not the end all, like it's not a place to go for psychiatric help or anything like that, but things that we can do daily before we get to that point. You know, what kind of routines and habits can we put into our lives to ensure that we lessen the damage done over the long term?
Yeah.
So I want it to be a place where people can come together and communicate things that they do to create those relief valves for that stress bucket, you know? And public service has always been a huge part of my life. It's who I am. Even though I get frustrated with it at times and the job adds up over time and I get a little stressed out, like, it is who I am. If I wasn't doing that, I would be trying to serve people in another capacity. That's just what I enjoy doing. I enjoy serving people. I enjoy being there, you know, and being a part of the solution when things are bad. I really do. But I've also recognized over these years that being in those situations over and over and over again add up, and not just for myself. In the 15 years that I've been a firefighter, I've already had 4 peers that are my age that have committed suicide. Wow. You know, there's now things being implemented for us for relief. There's the IAFF, the International Association of Firefighters, opened an entire clinic in Washington, D.C. for people who are getting to that overwhelm point to go to and spend time and get the help that they need. All those things are being put into place, but I don't necessarily see the lead up or the mitigation of the issues in that mid-range, you know,
where it becomes the preventative as opposed to, exactly, like, this is the, like, we're tossing in the towel and this is the last ditch effort.
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of work's being done in recognizing the signs and symptoms. Like now we have checklists at work. If you notice your peers, you know, acting this way, doing this thing, if they're removing themselves from typically social situations, you know, go to your peer support team and we'll implement those things. But I think that we need some tools to be able to help those people out with the prevention, things that they can do in their daily lives. I mean, if you look at the fire service or law enforcement, a typical coping mechanism was to go home and grab a beer and, yep, and start drinking, or, you know, remove yourself from society and get away. And I feel that for myself. I feel the need to remove myself regularly and be alone. But then, and I've only recently started admitting this, when I am alone is when I have the hardest time.
Yep.
I need to be around people. Maybe that's why CrossFit's great and being around people. But, you know, recently my wife was out of town, kids were at grandma and grandpa's house, spent the night at home alone, which has never happened to me. And it was honestly one of the worst nights of my life.
Yep.
Couldn't sleep. I considered going to the fire station to sleep because I was working the next day. But this is what people go through. And I feel like I have a lot of experience both in the fire service, growing up in a public service household, being in CrossFit and dealing with these high level athletes who also, you know, have similar issues. They put a lot of stress on themselves. They put a ton of stress on their body. And the recovery process of an elite athlete is very similar, I think, to what the recovery process should be for anyone who's stressed out from their job, whether it's a public servant or someone who works for Amazon or anything. I think that we can use the tactics that that I've seen utilized by high level athletes to recover in day-to-day life. So making sure you're getting that sleep, treating your body correctly, de-stressing, you know. Last season, was it Russell Wilson sustained that ankle injury? Mm-hmm. And it was like on the news everywhere. Yep. Russell Wilson's recovery process. Get woken up every half hour to get a massage. He would, and people were just amazed at the level of dedication he put into recovering from this injury. Well, I think that we could all take a little fraction of that and realize that we need to put a little bit more attention on ourselves and the recovery process, not only physically but mentally and emotionally. And there's so many things we can take from professional athletes that they do day to day to mitigate the stress and damage done to their bodies and to their minds. We can do that in real life.
You know, the there's an active study right now that's being done at the University of Boulder in Colorado that's showing fMRIs, brain MRIs. And people that like the amygdala, which is really it's the reptilian part of the brain, but it's also the part of the brain where if you were a primitive man, if you were a paleo man, and and you're walking out in the middle, and you know, a tiger jumps out at you, the amygdala would get lit up. But it's the same thing where if we're sitting in this office right now and this is your business and you walk out and somebody's thrown a brick through the front window, the amygdala for you is probably going to light up, right? So same thing with my kid comes home and she has a note from her teacher that says that she hit another kid, like, right? So it's all the same. Like our reaction, the fight or flight reaction, it's equal across the board. It just depends on what it is that triggers you. The study being done right now is showing the like psychological help or therapy or counseling or whatever, how it's actually shrinking the reaction of the amygdala. And a lot of the lighting, if you look at an fMRI on Google or something like that, it's like it'll be orange, it'll be red, or it'll be yellow, like all across these different hemispheres of the brain. And those will quiet down and lessen and not be so hot. It's like looking at a Doppler radar, basically. But the more therapy and the more outlets that somebody has, the more that will shrink down. And it also makes me think a lot about, there's been some work that's been done in the area of looking at fMRIs, brain MRIs, of people that are in chronic pain or have a chronic illness. And it mirrors almost exactly people that are isolated. So people that are in isolation, people that don't go out, or people that don't socialize with other people, people that are sitting at home alone when their kids are out of town, like, there are parts of the brain that are now that are mirroring what you would have if you had a chronic illness of some kind, which is really like, it's really scary and sad. And it's a bummer that, that it has taken this long. And I think about, you know, there's signs up at the fire station that are saying, if you see these signs, here's what you need to do. And I think that it's great that the IFF is doing something like that, which, by the way, the acronym International Association of Firefighters. So is this like a worldwide initiative? Like, is that the idea behind it, or is this something that's more local? Like,
Yeah. So the IAFF is an international organization. It's essentially our organized labor groups. So our union, and they try to put a focus on things that are affecting firefighters to a high degree. And they've recognized that mental health is one of those things. So the IAFF taking this on is a worldwide initiative. It is something that they're putting a large focus on right now. And I think it's great. I just want to make sure that day to day people are getting the help that they need. And I'm sure that at some point the IAFF will come out with day to day tasks and things that people can do to mitigate that stuff. But if I could be a small part of you know, helping people out in the meanwhile, while, you know, large organizations are very slow moving.
Yep.
It's difficult to get things going, even though they recognize the need. In order to implement those things, it's very slow moving. Us on a solo scale, individually, I can start putting stuff out right now. If I can affect one person, if one person finds a tool that they can use in their real life to mitigate the damage of stress, then it's worth it for me.
Yep.
So I'm just trying to do that. And I hope that the focus continues to be put on these issues, and that I hope that at some point there is, you know, the IAFF or whoever it happens to be, a larger organization who really puts a focus on this and gives us day-to-day stuff that can help.
Well, Cigna, the healthcare company, they had a commercial that aired during, I think it was the first round of the playoffs. I think it was during one of the commercial breaks of the Seahawks game. So anybody that was tuning in, which the NFL does massive ratings, obviously, especially in the playoffs, they're doing an ad campaign now that's talking about going to your health professional to talk about not just what's going on physically, but mentally and emotionally, and how those have just as big of a tie into your overall health. Like this massive healthcare company. And when I think of healthcare and like health insurance companies or healthcare companies, I think of fraud. I think of, like that's the kind of stuff. Like that's kind of stuff that I think about. But I'm looking at it, I'm like, the amount of unnecessary. I had a spinal surgeon that I interviewed in July, and he had said something like 90%, or maybe he's even like 92% of spinal surgeries are unnecessary and failures.
Oh, wow.
And are unneeded. And an insurance company is putting down $20,000 or $30,000 on a lumbar fusion versus sending somebody to therapy for 6 months. Like it's their skin in the game to really investigate this stuff and to have it be much more of a wide scale. So even though like it seems very preliminary in organizations like IAFF and Cigna and all these different I don't know if it's one of those things where like when I was looking at cars a few years ago and I thought like, who the hell drives a Subaru? And then I bought a Subaru and then I see Subarus everywhere.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it's that or if it really is just more and more.
Reticular activation
system. Yeah. Right. this has been awesome, Ryan. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. All right, thanks, man, for coming up. I appreciate it.
Yeah.